Hello, this is Donna Reed with the Champaign News Gazette this morning, April 22nd, 2019. We're going to look at a few papers here, Saturday, Sunday, and read some from today. I want to start out with the local section of Saturday's paper. That's dated April 20th, 2019, with Tom Kasich's mailbag. There's a picture of a large apartment complex on Church Street here in Champaign. That's on this page, and I'm going to read the story accompanying that. Here's the question asked by a reader. Fencing has been put up around the pillared building that used to be the United Way on Church Street in Champaign. Please tell me they're not tearing it down. The former home of the United Way at 404 West Church Street is being torn down. Permits to demolish it and 402 West Church Street have been filed with the City of Champaign by Prime Housing LLC, whose manager is Chris Saunders. Saunders purchased the United Way property last year and said at the time that he intended to redevelop it and the adjoining properties at 402 and 408 West Church Street. The project currently consists of 51 apartments across two three-story buildings with three studios, 39 one-bedrooms, and 9 two-bedrooms. I currently have them being developed as apartments, but am considering also making them condos, so they might be able to be sold in the future, he said. Saunders said he hopes to complete the demolition in the coming months and will start construction this summer. Another question asked by readers in this mailbag section, it's about the Humane Society's garage sale future, and here's Tom's answer. In response to several queries in recent months, Mary Tiffendrun, the executive director of the Champaign County Humane Society, reported that the group's 35th annual giant garage sale would be held at the former Rogards building, 214 South Walnut Street, Champaign, where the Boneyard Arts Festival recently set up a gallery for its showcase. Here are the sale dates. May 24th, 6 to 9 p.m. The $5 admission charge is good for Saturday, too. May 25th, 8 to 6 p.m. $3 admission charge until 3 p.m. May 26th, 9 to noon, $3 bag sale, everything you can fit in a bag for $3, free giveaway of remains, $1 admission, from 12:30 to 2 p.m. Drop-off dates are May 16th through the 17th from noon to 6 p.m. and May 18th from 9 to 3 p.m. Another article here asks, when they sold the Cheddar's restaurant site, they said they were going to build a new one at a different location. What happened to that? Here's Tom's answer. I could find no reference to a promise by Cheddar's to open another restaurant in Champaign. When Cheddar's closed its Champaign shop at 2101 North Prospect in 2011, it was replaced with another Darden restaurant's offering, Longhorn Steakhouse. Here's what Cheddar says today. While we don't have any plans that are set in stone for this area, we are always looking to expand. It's a huge compliment that our fans are asking for us to return to their neighborhood. I will make sure this suggestion for a new location in the Champaign-Urbana area is shared with those responsible for site selection. And another article, what happened to the restaurant South China? It's actually closed twice in the past year under two different owners, first in October 2018 and again in March 2019. There's no sign on the door at 25 East Springfield Avenue, Champaign, and the phone has been disconnected. And this. With the spring yard waste collection starting, what does Champaign-Urbana do with all that waste? It all gets recycled. Champaign's yard waste is sent to a local firm where it is used for livestock bedding and fertilizer. Urbana's goes to the Landscape Recycling Center at 1210 East University Avenue, Urbana, which, if you haven't seen it, is quite an interesting operation. We're going to look at another local article, this one entitled, Police Chief Put on Leave. This article is written by Mary Schink, out of Tolono. The police chief in Tolono is on paid leave while under investigation by the Illinois State Police. State Police Sergeant Mike Campbell confirmed that detectives in the Champaign office were asked to look into allegations regarding Rick Rainey, but Campbell said he was unable to say what the allegations are. Rainey has been employed as a full-time police officer in Tolono since 1996 and has been chief of police since 2000. Tolono Mayor Rob Murphy said he did not believe the state police investigation had anything to do with Rainey's duties in the village. Rainey earns about $57,660 annually and began his paid leave April 5th. We decided until he clears up this personal issue, it was in everyone's best interest to put him on leave, Murphy said. Rainey did not return a call or email seeking comment. Let's continue with some other local stories here. This one from Christie Clinic, office offering free skin spot checks. Christie Clinic's dermatology department will offer free skin spot checks May 6th as part of Melanoma Monday, a day devoted to raising awareness about melanoma and other kinds of skin cancer. Registration is required to reserve a spot for these screenings, which will be offered from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. at the main clinic, 101 West University Avenue in Champaign. Christie Dermatology providers will be offering spot checks in specific areas of concern rather than complete skin exams. Free sunscreen, snacks, and information about skin cancer danger signs will also be offered. Registering early is suggested. Appointments can be made at christieclinic.com or by calling the dermatology department at 217-366-1248. And now here's a story out of Gibson City. Pool committee tours other facilities. Four members of Gibson City's exploratory pool committee toured indoor swimming pool facilities in Flanagan and Pontiac to gather information that will be used to determine options for a proposed new pool in Gibson City. Attending the tours were Alderman Susie Tonegate, former Alderman Jan Hall, pool manager Randy Ferguson, and pool board member Paul Phillips. The fifth member of the committee, Mayor Dan Dickey, who serves as the group's chairman, was unable to attend. Tongate said that the pools in Flanagan and Pontiac are both attached to schools. Flanagan's pool is rectangular and features a couple of diving boards and a party room, while Pontiac's pool is L-shaped with a separate baby pool as well as splash play areas outside. Tongate said that in the very near future, her committee plans to tour other pool facilities in the area, including one at Lincolnshire Fields Country Club in Champaign, one in Monticello, and one in Leroy. Both indoor and outdoor pools will be visited, Tongate said, noting the committee has not determined whether to pursue an indoor rather than an outdoor facility to replace Gibson City's existing outdoor pool. An engineer told the committee that an indoor facility could be built at a cost of $2 million to $3 million using municipal loans. The engineer said state grants may be available for the project, but the city would have to take bonds out to pay for the project. The city had $160,000 already on hand through donations. The engineer said an indoor pool could potentially be opened by fall 2021. Dickey said the existing 98-year-old pool facility, located at the southeast corner of Lott Boulevard and 14th Street, is starting to show its age and probably needs to be replaced in the next 2 years in order to continue to pass its annual inspections. Continuing with some local articles here, Mahomet Village Board, annexation vote slated for Tuesday. Out of Mahomet. The Village Board is scheduled to vote Tuesday whether to annex municipal subdivisions, and many residents of those areas have made clear the answer they want the village leaders to give: no. I still don't know the benefits to the residents that are being annexed, Ron White told the trustees in a study session. What are the benefits for the residents? White lives in Briarcliff, one of the subdivisions up for annexation. The others are Summit Ridge and multiple portions of Lakeview subdivisions. Both Briarcliff and Summit Ridge are wholly bonded, surrounded by village land, prompting annexation. While in Lakeview, segments of the proposed annexation tracts are touching village limits on at least one side. Once that occurs, covenants in some areas require annexation into the village. An estimated 300 people would be added to the village if the currently proposed annexations are approved. This week's board meeting was the latest to draw a number of residents speaking against annexation. A March 26 session drew more than 30 residents this week. Let's go on by taking a look at Sunday's paper, April 21st, 2019, with a front page article on a gentleman by the name of Larry Geis, the man with a plan. Set to give commencement address at the U of I, businessman says he's always overprepared. This article's by Julie Worth out of Champaign. After years of zealously guarding his online profile, Larry Geis is getting used to seeing his name in lights, or at least on billboards. Like when he steps off a 7 a.m. train in Chicago and sees 15-foot letters spelling out Geis College of Business on a University of Illinois ad. The founder of Madison Industries, a manufacturing firm with 10,000 employees in 31 countries and annual revenues of $5 billion, initially didn't want his name on the U of I's business college. He even considered remaining anonymous when he and his wife, Beth, donated $150 million to the school in 2017, one of the largest to any business schools. After the gift was announced, he declined media interviews for several months. If you do an internet research on me other than the last 2 years, you won't find anything, Guy says. I didn't want to be on the internet. His name is everywhere now, down to the sleeves of the coffee cups sold at the business instructional facility. It happens to be my name, but at the end of the day, it's the college's name, and the college is defining it, he said. Ahead of his May 11th commencement speech, the U of I alumnus opened up about the ambitious philosophy behind his company, his belief in education, and how his parents, one a Holocaust survivor, influenced his life. Be prepared. First, Geis is clearly a planner. I never thought I was as smart as the other folks, so I always thought I had to work a little harder, he said. I'm an optimist externally, but that's because internally I always think something could go wrong. I always plan for that, Geis said. When he did an Ironman triathlon in Hawaii, Beth Geis wore extra inner tubes around her neck in case his bike had a flat in the heat. If he has to go on stage to give a speech, he thinks about tripping and prepares for that. "I even know what I'm going to say if it happens," he said. "So when I go into a situation, I'm not nervous because I've thought of everything." Geis attributes that trait to his father, a businessman, and his mother, who has a healthy skepticism, he said. "That combination always had me prepared, probably over-prepared," Geis said. He grew up in Mendota, a town of just about 7,000 people in LaSalle County, where you knew everybody and everybody knew you, he said. It was a wonderful way to grow up. He still stops in to see friends on his trips back and forth to Champaign-Urbana to teach his U of I course in entrepreneurship. His early life focused on sports and work. He detasseled corn, baled hay, mowed lawns, worked with cattle. Anything that needed to be done on a farm, I did. It was a great way to learn a hard day's work and see the results of your efforts. He played football, wrestled, and ran track in high school, and competed in the former Prairie State Games, a kind of statewide summer Olympics at the U of I. One summer, he got to meet the U of I's wrestling coach and asked what he thought of Geis's chances of competing in college. He said, "You'd be a great throwing dummy here," Geis said. "I was not going to be a great wrestler, and it focused me elsewhere." That turned out to be business, specifically accounting at Illinois. He applied to only one school. When you grow up in Mendota, going to the University of Illinois was the school to go to, Geis said. His father, Larry, worked at a manufacturing company and was the first in his family to graduate from college. His mother, Rachel, never finished eighth grade and stayed home to raise Larry and his sister, Rhonda. "When I was graduating from here, it was a very big deal for them," Geis said. His mother was born in the Netherlands during World War II, and her father was active with the Dutch resistance. When Rachel was 3 months old, her father was picked up by the Nazis, so the next day her mother put a rosary around her neck and sat her in front of a Catholic orphanage, Geis said. Her mother was taken that day, so she survived. After the war, Rachel was reunited with a great aunt and uncle who raised her, along with their own daughter. Rachel came to the United States when she was 18 and settled in Alexandria, Virginia. She went to visit her adopted sister in Rockford, met Geis's father, and they later moved to Mendota for his job. "She's the happiest person you'd ever meet, as happy as you can imagine," he said. Geis decided early on in fifth grade that he wanted to buy and run a business someday. That was the year Michael Heisley, future billionaire owner of the Vancouver, now Memphis, Grizzlies, bought Conco & Company, the Mendota company where the elder Larry Geis worked. "I was hooked," Geis said. He loved accompanying his father to the manufacturing plant on weekends and later worked there during the summers. He liked seeing products roll out and the fruits of people's labors being marketed and sold to folks who could use it to do other things with it. After college, Geis ended up running several companies that Heisley bought up around the country. "It was a fabulous learning experience," he said. He had picked up other business know-how at the U of I, where he was active in student government and served on the Illini Media Board, which owned the Daily Illini, WPGU Radio, and other student-run media. It seems that a girlfriend worked at WPGU, and a friend told Geis that her boss was interested in dating her. The next day, Geis saw an ad in the DI about two openings for students on the IMB board. He applied and was selected. The whole thought being, I would be the boss of this guy who was the boss of my girlfriend. The company was in the process of moving off campus, and Geis learned a lot about how boards can be involved in the business side of a company, but not the editorial side, because you don't want to ruin the independence of your journalists. And the girlfriend, well, that didn't quite work out. After graduating in 1988, Geis worked at what is now Deloitte, then earned an MBA from Northwestern University, where he currently sits on the board. After working with Heisley for a few years, Geis started Madison Capital Partners in 1994 at age 27. "I had no product, I had no invention," he said, "but he was able to attract really sharp people who wanted to build a business with me." Geis loaded up 10 credit cards and recruited investors. His wife worked 3 jobs, a college friend loaned him $50,000, and he began buying up businesses. "We built wonderful businesses with wonderful people. The problem was we'd have to sell the businesses to give the investors their return," he said. Then, 7 years ago, at an off-site retreat, Geis and his team talked about how to build the company. As an icebreaker, he had everyone write their own eulogy, what they wanted to be remembered for. People talked about family and doing good for the world, he said, but they also talked about building something professionally that would outlast them, something their grandkids would know about. Buying, selling off companies, they agreed, wasn't it. "We decided that day to build something that would be here after we're gone, something that would be here 200 years from now," he said. "We're going to attract businesses and entrepreneurs to this company that make the world safer, healthier, and more productive. And we're going to create a culture that would be sustainable and outlast us." Madison Industries now makes products that help automobiles reduce carbon emissions and improve indoor air quality in workspaces, schools, and homes, he said. "It makes pens that surgeons use to cut and cauterize skin and remove the harmful smoke plume that can cause lung damage to doctors and patients. It manufactures a part for a device that removes pathogens from blood to keep the nation's blood supply safe," he said. The corporation, privately held by Geis and 500 owner-managers, has rejected products that don't fit that mold. For Geis, it's important for leaders to connect the dots between the work employees do every day and a higher purpose, to remind them what they're doing is good for the world. "We spend 60% of our waking hours in our job. Shouldn't that have some meaning?" he asked. "Leaders also have to build trust with their actions," he said. "Employees are watching you each and every day." He talked about 2 company plant managers, one in Florida and the other near California's Napa Valley, who did amazing things during recent hurricanes and wildfires in those 2 states. Each of them shut down the plant to provide food, money, and a place to sleep for displaced employees, and asked workers who weren't affected by those disasters to help those who were. They put employees before profits. That's showing true leadership. Did Geis ever think he'd be this successful? "I still don't think I'm successful. That's what drives me. I'm always my hardest critic. I'm always thinking about what could go wrong. What am I not doing right? How can I improve?" he said. "Did I think I'd have the ability to influence others? Did I think I'd have the ability to help others at the scale I do? Absolutely not." Geis credits his wife, a former teacher, for their lifelong mission to support education. They met at the U of I when Geis went with a roommate to pick up his girlfriend at a sorority house. "As they waited on the front steps, my wife walked by and I said, 'Who was that?'" A few weeks later, she took Geis with her to tutor underprivileged children at the University YMCA. Later, working in Chicago after college, a colleague asked Geist to tutor at the Boys and Girls Club on the West Side. I learned there was a lot of need there, but if you're able to spend time with the kids and help them and give them access to a great education, you could change their lives, he said. If you change the life of a child, you change the trajectory of a family for generations. He later met Matthew Lynch, who wanted to start a scholarship academy for African American youth on Chicago's West Side. Geist agreed to support the project, now called the Geist Campus of Chicago Jesuit Academy, which has a 98% high school graduation rate. He's doing just unbelievable work, Geist said of Lynch. Beth Geist tutors there every week. She loves that one-to-one interaction, he said. I'd rather build the school. His advice for other Illinois business graduates? Have as many experiences as you can, and don't stop. I'm experiencing all the time. 7 years ago, we weren't building Madison Industries. We were building Madison Capital Partners, he said. Keep growing. Keep learning. And the minute you think you're done, that's when you're about to get the next big surprise. There's an inner article here that continues to be about Larry Geist. This one's written by Julie Worth, and it's called, quickly, What's in a Name? The $150 million gift from Larry and Beth Geist to the University of Illinois College of Business had its roots in a dinner conversation. Geist was having his regular dinner with finance professor Rob Metzger before teaching his U of I entrepreneurship class and told him, "We're falling behind here at Illinois. My kids are going through the college process, and all I hear about is other business schools. We still had great placement rates, top students. We had all the numbers. The problem was twofold. We were getting out-marketed and we were getting out-scholarshiped," said Geist, who confessed his 0-for-2 so far with his own children, choosing Illinois. Metzger introduced Geist to business dean Jeff Brown, who had already settled on a $150 million as the amount he'd need to enact his vision for the college and the attention-grabbing number that would help us raise our aspirations. Brown presented this to Geist, and he didn't blink. Geist asked strategic questions about the college's mission and plans, then met with Brown the following week in Chicago and gave his verbal commitment. Geist was impressed by Brown's plans to democratize education by doubling the college scholarships, among other goals. Geist wasn't excited about his name going on the college, however, partly because it's often mispronounced, and even came up with a list of other possible candidates. Brown persuaded him the name would help build the college's brand, and a friend told Geist, "Within 3 minutes of the naming, it will no longer be your name. The facility and the alumni and the students, those are the people who will define it." The naming, the flexibility, the unrestricted gift, Geist's involvement with students and strategic help for the college all made it many gifts in one, Brown said. I couldn't have asked for a better business partner. We're going to stop right there in our first part of reading the News Gazette today on Monday, catching up on some Saturday and Sunday news, and I'll be back with you to read part two of the News Gazette just briefly.